Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for this Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong for 39-odd years. Sunday nights at 8 p.m., so it's Sunday night and it's 8 p.m., and this is our pre-Thanksgiving Day edition of the Limark Technical Net. Let me drop for a second, and then I'll give you the usual links to be aware of. Okay, if you can't get me on the radio, the next best route is email. You can reach me for either asking me a mailbag question. We actually have a mailbag question this evening that was presented last Sunday in the chat room. I unfortunately didn't recognize it as such until I was done with the segment. Anyway, so if you have a mailbag question, if you have a topic that you'd either like to discuss or be part of a discussion for or hear discussed, or if you would like to share with us a puzzle. I have a sort of a puzzle tonight, and I'm always looking for new and interesting puzzles that question things that we take for granted or remind us of things that we sort of gotten used to not thinking about. Or if you would like me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him a question of some space-related or NASA-related news story that you heard, or if you want to contact him directly, it's spacenetreport@gmail.com. So that's that link. At mailbag@ac2gs.com is my email address. Also, I have a link page. It's a very interesting link page, I think. It has YouTubes of interest. It has science articles of interest. And tonight, it has a couple of interesting questions and illustrations that if you have nothing better to do, mosey on over and take a look at the page, because hopefully it'll play a part in the discussion that we're going to have later on tonight. The link page, again, is roy.ac2gs.com. And again, check it out. It's open 24/7, but take a look at it in the next hour or so before we get to the puzzle and the topic that I've selected, hopefully, for tonight. We also have a chat room. You can either go to Limark's own webpage and find the link, or you can type into your browser the word chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll take you to our chat room. We have an audio stream of Glen Oaks 24/7, or as much as I can make it 24/7. Just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you an audio stream to the Glen Oaks repeater. If you find yourself outside of radio contact with it. Also, as always, want to remind people, Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive of these technical nets that go as far back as September of 2006. His site is amateurradio.tv. He's had over a million visitors, so make it a million and one. A lot of wisdom from amateur radio operators still with us and others who unfortunately have become silent keys. Let me drop for a second and I'll tell you my plans for tonight. Okay, as per usual, I will call for any technical questions. Preferably the first should be related to amateur radio, if at all possible. We will take people's first name and call sign, and we will get to them in an orderly fashion. Should we run out of amateur radio questions, we will open the floor to any kind of scientific questions, medical questions as well. Keep in mind that we do not treat nor diagnose over radios, so that would be a general conversation about subjects related to medicine or any field of science. If you're interested, I'm game if you're game. Tonight, we have a mailbag question, as I mentioned, so we'll be getting into that. And also, I have a trip down the rabbit hole, some very, I think, interesting aspects to the way electricity sort of works that most people tend not to think about. So they probably have the wrong impression, but hopefully we'll correct that, hopefully without giving anyone a migraine. That'll take us hopefully to about 10:15, where we'll call on Paul to bring us the SpaceNet report. which will take us to 11 p.m. I will return, tie a bow on it, wish you well, and call it a week. So that's the plan if all the electronics works the way it's supposed to, which I hope it will. So with that in mind, if anyone out there has any questions of a technical nature, preferably amateur radio, please hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign. Craig, you kind of broken up a little bit, and it's all that I heard is not very good news.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And yes, it's KD2OGB.
Okay, so you have news to share with us tonight that isn't very good news. Is that what you got for tonight?
Nothing bad, don't worry.
Okay, very good. You're on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list tonight? Please give me your first name and your call sign.
KG2RY, David. Good evening, everyone. Hotel David.
Okay, David and Jim recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down for tonight? Please hit that push-to-talk button. Okay, it sounded like someone keyed up the repeater, but I didn't hear anyone say anything. So one last chance, if you would like to be on the early list and you have a question for tonight, tell me your first name and your call sign. Okay, hopefully we'll be kind of busy and active, and there'll be other people coming on with questions or comments or what have you. Anyway, let's get to the list. First up is Craig, KD2OGB. What's your comment, question, or bad news for tonight?
Updated AOL, and it's still not giving me the notification. It literally gives it to me as soon as I open the app. Why would it give it to me when I'm literally in the app and not like when my phone is off? I'm not on the app, and it's only giving them to me literally the second I open it.
Well, my guess would be that it's not refreshing between intervals. A well-behaved, well-written application should stay live in the background and be part of a well-behaved multitasking operating system, and every so often go out to the server, see if there's any mail. If it is, receive at least the headers and such, and then trigger the alert. If it's poorly behaving or if it's been kind of left to wilt in the sun, it's possible that it doesn't log into the server during inactivity on your part. It may be a sign that they're kind of saving resources on the server, because if they design it to operate the way it seems to, they require far less CPU cycles.
I really don't know what else to do anymore. I'm going to have to further diagnose this. I don't really need it. I mean, I open it up every day anyway. I mean, once in a while it will give me a notification while my phone is off, but it only will give it to me the second I open it, so I don't know what else I could think of, but that's all I have for now. If I have anything more, I'll pop back on. AC2GS, KD2OGB.
Okay, I wish you good luck, Craig. Again, your ultimate other options are to find other domains that offer you free accounts. But some are better than others. We talked about Gmail, but there are a lot of others out there. Some of them just quietly cull your information and kind of sell it in bulk vis-a-vis Gmail. Others just slap an ad on every kind of email that you send. I tend to find those more annoying, actually, than Gmail, but different strokes for different folks. But I hope you find a solution to your problem, Craig, and if and when you do, come back and tell us how you solved it.
I'll try. Rich came on. What do you got?
No, Roy, I just wanted to add my name to the list. That's all. W2BZ.
Okay, very good, Rich. You're on the list. Craig, once again, I wish you well, and I hope you find a useful solution, and you can come back and share it with the rest of us.
Thanks. Really means a lot to me. KD2OGB EQRT.
Okay, this is AC2GS, of course, and the next on my list is David, KG2RY. What's your question or topic or comment for tonight, David?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody. My question is, free telecommunication, free media, you know? Like RF signal versus internet. What's the best way to do it? And how do you make it sound really good?
I'm not exactly sure what the question is. Are you considering putting up your own little pirate station and doing broadcasts over the air?
Negative. But we talked about this before, you know, where I'm making these very nice QSOs with DX stations on 20 meters and 17 meters, and we're having these nice long conversations, you know, very relaxing, very, very friendly. And it's great. And, of course, the only thing that I have to pay for, you know, is the radio itself and the electricity and to send my signal from here to there, from there to here, you know, and or to say that there's no extra cost and there's minimal advertisements there.
Okay, I'm not exactly sure what mode that you're using. If you're using repeaters, then the money was spent by repeater operators. They invested in repeaters. The club repeater is an example of that. Usually they prefer to have members pay the dues so that they can pay for the expenses. There are people out there with their own private repeaters that for the sheer pleasure of assisting others, they bankroll it. If you're talking about talk groups and digital networks that work through hotspots, you know, you have to consider the fact that you are paying for the ISP, the internet access, unless you're only operating through, you know, public Wi-Fi networks, does cost money. It's not a word, a penny per word type of expense, but there is an overhead for that.
Yes, but, you know, let's say you want to watch TV, and you want to stream for free. There's services where you can stream for free. So they tack on like a million commercials, you know, that you have to watch. You know, you could pay for the streaming, but then you're also paying for the commercials you're watching. Or, you know, you can get a TV and hook up an antenna, and you get the commercials, but you don't have to pay extra for them.
Okay, I mean, there are an almost infinite number of business models for entertainment, ranging from a few commercials to a lot of commercials to X number of commercials plus paying a subscription at a lower level to paying a subscription at a higher level with few to none advertisements and everything in between. There are places that have a lot of ads running through them and others that have a few ads. And unfortunately, they're subject to change usually in the direction of more ads. People kind of regularly play with YouTube. Unless you pay for the premium level that takes out some of the ads, you get ads sometimes at the beginning, sometimes at the end, sometimes in the middle. Even if you pay for premium, though, sometimes the streamers, the providers have a internal ad that's not taken out of the broadcast. So, you know, that's an example where you pay money and you still see some ads, but not a lot of them. And, you know, everyone has to make a kind of decision of how much ads they'll tolerate. Even now with Kindle, you can buy a Kindle book reader that has some ads and the cost is somewhat subsidized, or you can pay extra and have no ads. So they're trying every business model imaginable. They're all trying to accomplish the same thing, to make as much money with the largest number of subscribers.
WB2EAV, this reminds me of something from my youth that's no longer around.
Please tell us, Ed.
Back in the day, when people read newspapers on the subway, people would often buy the paper, read it on the train, and leave it on the seat so somebody else could pick it up for free.
Those were the good old days. I don't know. I don't travel that much through the subway system these days. The amount of newspaper readership has unfortunately plummeted. Publishing in general is going through a great upheaval. But I do remember, Ed, back in those days, it wasn't kind of that generic. It isn't like you would go to my lovely little F train and find five or six copies of the New York Times sitting there. But you might find the New York Post or a Daily News sitting on an empty seat. So yeah, that was nice when that happened. Yeah, unfortunately, those days are gone.
And one other item about what David said. You have one second?
Yeah, sure, Ed.
He said he heard two foreign stations on 20 meters saying how the only thing they have to pay for is the cost of the radio. That's true for 20 meters. Maybe that's all they were talking about.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how you do the accounting. There are a lot of guys out there who, if you add up the cost of a station that they would think would suit them, they probably would not like to pay that type of a price. There are guys out, and also, I think more problematic these days, unfortunately, than the price of the hardware is the problems of putting up a decent antenna someplace, with homeowners associations and all kinds of other limitations. Antennas are very problematic. So there grew an industry of remote access ham radio stations and even simulators. For some reason out there on the Internet, they offer people voice over IP, and they even inject fake QRM and static and all kinds of fun stuff to simulate the wonderful experience of an iffy contact. So there's, you know, it's true that old-time amateur radio is just electricity and the hardware and such, but some people can't kind of get that together anymore.
All that I'm saying is the cost of the radio is a tremendous variable, but there is no fee for using the radio spectrum, for example, 20 meters, once you are licensed. That's all I'm saying. Nothing more and nothing less. WB2EV.
Okay. I mean, it differs in different countries. Right now, thankfully, when I renewed my license, it cost me nothing. My guess is the FCC did approve I think it's a $30. I lost track. I think it's $30. They might have dropped it down. That they haven't really said when it will go into effect. My guess is it will go into effect next year, but it's anyone's guess. So right now the license is free. At one point it wasn't, and at one point in the future, most likely, it won't be free either.
Well, you know, back in the old days, you start with a radio. You have to somehow get a radio. You get a radio, and then you have to put electricity in it. The cost of running the radio was the electricity. Now people, for entertainment, they stream. It costs $44.95 a month or whatever. You know, then they can spend as much as $250 on cable TV, so they can get HBO Max.
Most people don't know that their set-top box is eating up a lot of electricity that they use, that they keep on 24/7.
K2YO.
KD2FIU.
Okay, George recognized there was another person. I only heard a partial call sign, so the person who isn't George, can you repeat your first name and your call sign?
Bernie, call sign is K2YO.
Oh, hello, Bernie. Long time no talk. What is your response?
I was just going to comment on kind of a conglomeration of previous topics where you were talking about it used to be you could find newspapers on the subway, et cetera. The sheer quantity of information that we have today of content that we have today is incredible. There's, what, like 200 or 300 cable channels. There's a ton of streaming media. My wife's a big fan of Hulu and the Netflix, et cetera. And so 30 years ago, 40 years ago, call it 30 years ago, we didn't have near this. I got my license about 30 years ago, and we didn't have all this this amount of content that my telephone could read me the newspaper, et cetera. And so, yeah, that's the challenge. The content has value. And as soon as content doesn't have value, then people treat it as having no value. And that's part of the dance that you've talked about, Roy, of what do they charge for it? You know, is the newspaper free to read off of their website, or is there a paywall that you can read part of it but not all of it, et cetera? And that's the dance that's going on. One thing that we need to make sure that we do not forget is that our frequency allocations are worth hundreds, if not millions, hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, and that we have them for what is effectively a processing fee. You know, $30 or whatever it was to get our license processed once every 5 years, you know, goes away in the rounding. And so our spectrum is absolutely priceless.
I agree with you, Bernie, and if you don't use it, you lose it, and a lot of hams have been very vocal with other hams that people need to use our frequency allocations. If Congress sees that the frequencies are just sitting there being unused and they could make some money off of it, it'll take them about 1 nanosecond to figure out to do the same. One of the saving graces is sort of reminiscent of the very early years of amateur radio. The reason why we have 160 meters and 80 meters and 40 meters and 20 meters was because the Navy, who originally had control of the frequency spectrum in the United States, thought it was worthless. They couldn't use it above 200 meters or something. So they kind of said, we'll give it to these guys for the time being. We'll see what they can do with it. Right now it's worthless to us. So we're sort of in the same place. Most of the bandwidth that people really are willing to spend billions on tend to be in the microwave. So we're kind of lucky that way. But again, if we don't use it, they'll sell it at a lower price to some company that thinks that they could make a business plan out of it. So I agree with you. And the additional thing is, yeah, we I don't know if I'd say we're in the golden age of information. Because a lot of the information is really bad and low-quality information. So you need what I used to tell Dick, a good BS meter, to kind of tell the difference between the two. But there's a lot of stuff, and it's hard to keep in touch with the whole culture. I regularly will thumb through a People magazine, and my usual response is, who the hell are these people?
WP2EAB.
Yes, Ed.
You are mentioning 200 meters and down. Here is some low-quality information because I just thought of it and I have no evidence to support it. Back when the Navy was calling this, they were still using spark gap transmitters, which have a frequency spectrum that doesn't go much above 200 meters. And that may have led them making the decision. Then with the invention of CW transmission, the whole universe changed. Again, just a theory on my part.
Okay, yeah, I mean, there was a component of that, the Audion tube, the triode, tuned networks. I mean, back in the old days, the reason, I'm sure you know, and most of the people out there know, but a few people might not, the reason why to this day we talk about 160 meters, 80 meters, 40 meters and such is because at the earliest times you had no real resonant tuned circuit at your transmitter. The way that you knew what band you were transmitting on was simply the length of your half-wave dipole. You cut it to resonant at 80 meters, and so it was an 80-meter transmission. It didn't have a nice, pleasant LC circuit. Those were the bad days of the spark gap. And if there's anything that's more archaic than a spark gap, which was noisy and produced ozone and produced a lot of background RF noise, is the decoherer, the receiving device, which is basically some iron filings that clumped up when it received the RF signal. So, you know, the guys who started this hobby way, way back would not recognize it today.
Yeah, I think that, what was I going to say? I forgot what I was going to say. You know, there is a tremendous value in ham radio, and also in all the frequencies and all of the privileges that a person can get, you know, how to say they can make the most of it in any case, in any frequency, in any spectrum, you know. And I guess for me that's what makes this hobby so fulfilling, you know.
Yeah, Rich recognized, but I just want to touch on George because George wanted to add something, and then we'll go to you, Rich. So first you, George. George, KD2FIU, are you out there? Okay, I guess George stepped away for a moment. Rich, what's your comment?
My comment is if they do raise it to $30, I'll bet you scores and scores of hams that have their radios in their closet who are really not active now in ham radio will say, "Now nah, I'll give up my license. I'm not going to pay $30. Whereas if it was free, they would renew it just to have it in case they got interested again. So I don't think it would be very good for the hobby in terms of numbers of ham radio operators.
Well, I would tend to agree with you, but I don't think that's what the FCC had in mind. At first, I think the reason behind the fact that they didn't charge was when they considered the expense on their part of maintaining a payment system and the checks and balances, they decided that it would probably cost more to just maintain the system than they got returned with the licensing fees. And so they said, the heck with it. We'll just be seem like the nice guys, the generous guys, and not charge anyone. And then in the previous administration, it was sort of decided that no one wants to be a nice guy about this, and they want to charge. And that kind of left this administration saying, well, in theory, we're going to charge you $30, but we're not going to instate it yet. We're going to sit on it and think about it for some time. So it might come, you know, about, we might find a notice in January 1st, or it might be like waiting for Godot. It never quite happens. So we'll have to see what happens. But I would agree with you, Rich. There are more than a few amateur radio operators who, you know, are tight with a couple with the bucks. And if they're not using the license, it's very possible that they'll say, the heck with it. And we'll see a drop in our numbers, unfortunately.
I have some data on that, Roy.
Suddenly, Ed.
As far as ham radio not being, you know, licenses not being, you know, being free, back in the 30s and into the 40s, I think there was a very, very specific reason. In the 1930s, my father was a teenager. He never really dabbled in radio. He gets drafted. He gets boot camp. Somebody comes up to him and says, did you know you're an Chinese genius? And he said, well, I've dabbled in radio. He said, good, that makes you an Chinese genius. And they pulled him out, and he ended up going to radar school. Repeat that how many hundreds of thousand times?
Well, yeah, I've heard stories like that. They go kind of in both directions. I still remember in the 60s, I wasn't a ham, but I was interested in the hobby, and I got QST magazines. And there were a lot of articles about a lot of people who came from the Signal Corps. So they sort of went into the hobby the other way. Other people got into the hobby as kids, and then they inevitably ended up working in the Signal Corps. Unfortunately, though, the sense that I get as far as the government is concerned is, unfortunately, they don't really look upon amateur radio operators the way that they once did. They seem to think that there's so much in the way of professional communication systems set up that they don't need a parallel amateur group, and that the trouble isn't worth the effort. You see that with emergency services. A lot of the federal agencies aren't that real thrilled when amateur radio operators volunteer. When the hurricane hit Puerto Rico, they didn't quite know what to do with the amateur radio operators. I think about a dozen or so volunteered to go down there, and they basically had to shift for themselves.
You know, Roy, yesterday, last night, we're talking about free media. And I was listening to the shortwave radio. I listened to one station, this music. I don't know for how long it was going. Maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. It was so amazing. No commercials. A little bit of fading. And then there was, I tuned down to AM, and I was listening to some really great sounds, you know, with some commercials, but it wasn't too bad, you know. On an inexpensive transceiver, you know, it's quite affordable, and it can also transmit, of course.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of free with some ad content. You know, obviously these broadcasters, transmitters, it doesn't cost them nothing, so there's a reason usually behind any broadcaster. Sometimes it's pure money advertisement. Sometimes it's, I don't know, we'll call it propaganda. Certain fields of view that are being promoted. Someone's paying money because transmitters aren't free. Receivers are relatively inexpensive. Electricity, as long as you don't live in this area, is reasonably priced. So yeah, there's all kinds. There's a lot of free stuff. There's people who are publishing stuff on the internet every second. They're not running ads. They're doing it out of a glee for the joy of spreading their information out there. You know, I mean, we're doing it tonight. No one's paying me. I'm sure no one's paying you for this. We're all doing it gratis.
QSL, QSL. But, you know, it was just music. Music and, you know, like a DJ person that was speaking between the songs. And, you know, it was just so pleasurable. I'd say, this is really great. And I'm really glad that I somehow found this. It was totally unexpected for me. And I guess that's the kind of experience I like. I don't know how long it was, maybe a week and a half ago, the last game of the World Series. I watched it on TV with a converter and an antenna. Picture was crystal clear and the sound was great. And it was free, totally free. The only downsides, you know, there were commercials.
Well, commercials are very important. Commercials make a lot of money. You know, Google, a good size of Google's fortune is simply based upon running little ads on those Google pages. So as long as they don't annoy people, it can generate a great deal of revenue. You know, all kinds of sports generates, you know, tens of hundreds of millions of dollars in ad revenue. It's not anything to be snarky about. So to you, it doesn't cost anything other than your time of watching an advertisement. I tend to really get fatigued watching advertisements. I try as best I can to excise them from stuff that I watch, mostly successfully, but sometimes not. But that's the price you pay. But that is, it is a price. You're not paying a dollar. You're paying in moments of your life that you can't get back again once spent watching an advertisement for a Coca-Cola.
Yeah, I hear you. And I don't know when it was, how long ago this was. I'm trying to see if there was a date. This might be 3 or 4 weeks ago. I did an experiment on medium wave, which is the amplitude modulation, the AM band. And I was trying to go in between the loud broadcast to see what I could pick up in terms of DX. And I learned that the proximity for DX on AM is about 2,000 kilometers. Cities, you know, as far as maybe Richmond, Atlanta, Chicago, you know, and it was kind of interesting to listen to those stations with their local advertisements and their, their agenda. And maybe there's music there, I don't know. And, of course, it's free, you know, an RF signal coming in is free.
Yeah. In the old days, that was regularly done. There were clear channels that were set up without any blocking, so that at night, when ground wave propagation went crazy, you could hear into the Midwest and hear all kind of regional aspects. Although lately, radio broadcasts have become increasingly homogenized. Because of ad revenue shrinking, because people are taking their ad money in different places, there's a lot of, groups of companies that are kind of wholesaling broadcasting. So they're homogenizing it and turning it kind of the same stuff all over the country. They just stream the audio, and it's far less expensive. But you know, a few years ago, you know, when Eric and Dick and even Paul would talk about it, they have antenna aerials on their roofs, and they DX TV broadcasts and try sometimes when propagation is working, they can listen to local networks that aren't in the New York metropolitan area and give them a better sense for how regional areas are a little bit different in different places of the country.
Well, Roy, you know, I tried to do that with my TV. I had a converter box from digital to analog, and the TV is an old flat-screen CRT, so it's really deep and wide. It's a big, fat thing. And I tried to connect it to my dual-band antenna on the roof, but I didn't get perfect signal on many of the channels. So I took a mag mount, I put it on my air conditioner, and I connected it to the converter, and everything perfect, crystal clear. So go figure, you know, same kind of antenna. And how to say, you know, all the benefits of not having to buy cable.
AD2VHD.
Yes, Jim.
WS2N.
Paul recognized, but the Jim threw out his call sign. Jim, do you have something you want to say?
I do. Roy, you were putting out a very good conversation tonight, and this gentleman seems to have scrambled it up to just gobbledygook. And his last statements seem to say... He's not trying to say anything. He's just trying to gobbledygook the whole thing. Please put it aside and go ahead with your conversation.
Well, Jim, you know, I like to give people an opportunity to express themselves and explain. And you expressed yourself, and I would feel bad not letting other people express themselves as well. Paul, you wanted to say something. You're one of those guys that would chat with Dick and Eric about DX broadcast transmissions and such. I mean, I've gone the way of cable 30 years ago. I haven't had an aerial on my roof for television in these many years. So what's your experience has been?
Oh, I went your way this time. The second cable came through here in the 80s. But what's happened after storm after storm and hurricane after hurricane, and you lose power and, you know, cable's down. You know, you really want to watch, you know, put the TV on and watch some kind of news, local news, anything. So when they went digital, you know, I wound up with these digital converter boxes and hooked them up. Because this way you could see something, put anything on during a storm, and it turns out I actually use it now and then. I have it in another room. But if you're having trouble receiving the signal, you get a preamplifier, and the ones I used, well, came from Radio Shack, and another one by Philips, and it's inexpensive, you know, these $29 thing, and you plug them in, and you buy the one that plugs into the wall. You know, it's a powered amplifier, and it stays on all the time. So naturally, it's an input and output, and you know, so your antenna coax comes down from you wherever you have it outside, ties into the preamp, from the preamp into the digital box, from the digital box into you know, right into your TV. You know, the digital box is converted automatically. You don't need an RF modulator. So, you know, plug that coax directly from that converter into your TV. And it works pretty good. I'm telling you, I get, you know, I'm out in Mount Kokomer, and I get a lot of stations. You know, I get 2 and 4 and 11, a lot of stations, plus stations that you wouldn't even think you would normally get. Probably about 30 stations overall. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, Paul, do you use a rotator at all, or is it a stationary antenna?
Yeah, I'm pointing west, you know, toward the city. This way I could pick up, you know, the antennas from Empire, and there's another one from Alpine, New Jersey. I don't have to move anything. If I did, I probably could get a little bit better signal one way or another. But it's the Yagi, you know, it's inexpensive Yagi from, I think this one came from, this one came from Walmart years ago. You know, maybe about, I don't know, 5 or 6 elements on it. You know, it's very compact. And it works well. You know, of course I still, you know, my main thing is cable, you know, optimum. But it's sure great when there's power failure. You know, put the generator on and watch TV. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. You know, like I said, as soon as cable came to good old Brooklyn, I switched over. I had to explain to the guy who was installing it how I wanted it configured, because I had a VCR and I wanted 2 circuits, one that I could record into the VCR and the other that I could just play on the TV at the same time. And it confused the heck out of the poor guy, so I just said, just cut me a 6-foot length of cable and an 8-foot length of cable and a 2-foot length of cable, and I'll put the connections together myself. And that was my first cable. Then I went with satellite, which was okay as long as it wasn't raining or snowing particularly heavy. And then I moved over to the Internet Fios and such. And it's down every so often, but not that much. And thankfully, power in Brooklyn is pretty good. I think the last power out was in the mid, 2004, 2005. So I'm good for that. So I'm happy with my setup right now. I'm streaming through YouTube television. It has a virtual digital television type of recorder, DVR, and I can pick out the ads and go without them.
Very, very good, yeah. And, okay, you're in the city limits. You know, when I grew up in Queens, there was, like, never seemed to be a power outage. You know, I mean, I think there was a Hurricane Nora or something like that. I remember that one back in the early 60s. And maybe a couple of other times where we had a power failure. So that wouldn't be a reason to have what I have in the city. But out here, it pays to have that. And all your streaming stuff and all that, yeah. Yeah, I went with the Roku. And I could stream it. And I guess anything I want on that. But very good. I'll turn it back to you, Roy. WS2M, listen.
AC2GS. Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I wouldn't quite call it a golden age, but we have a ridiculous amount of material that we could review. We don't have enough hours in our own personal days to look at them all. You could never go through any significant fraction of YouTube's stored information, and web pages pop up every day and all kinds of things. There is the battle for the streaming eyeballs. Companies, multi-billion dollar communication companies, are throwing billions of dollars away trying to set up a Netflix-like streaming situation. So we're in the midst of a streaming war that most of the people will end up losing billions of dollars, and a few lucky people will win and collect profits of billions of dollars. So it's an interesting time we live in. By the way, in the chat room, W1ECB points out that tomorrow is going to be the anniversary of the so-called Max Headroom incident. That was when, in the middle of the night, a cable station was kind of shanghaied, and all of a sudden it broadcast these weird videos with max headroom and such, and no one's been able to figure out who did it. Probably some guy, some engineer in the middle of the night at some control room someplace did it as a lark, or did it as an accident and didn't fess up to it. So that was the so-called max headroom incident.
KG2RY, Roy, you know, this very interesting conversation, and it started out as free media. We're talking about free media, and cable is far from free. I remember in 1981, I watched cable for the first time at my parents' house. I had seen it at the dormitories of NYU, and what to say? I sat there maybe for two or three days on and off looking at it, and I didn't really see anything interesting there. And what to say? There was tons of commercials there anyway.
Okay, but obviously there was a promise in the technology that has proven itself in all the money that has been made, wasted, and spent on the technology. I don't know if you, most likely you remember, as I do, when you visited movie houses were scared beyond belief with cable, and they actually had advertisements, and they handed out brochures of the evil of cable television, and you should vote against any kind of municipal contracts with access to it, and certainly don't buy in on it. And I don't know if you remember those propaganda booths that were set up in movie houses for a while.
Well, you know, I believe there was this this person who is a scholar of television, Marshall McLuhan, and his thought, I guess his thing was the medium is the message, you know. So what are you getting from cable? What are you getting from streaming? What are you getting from this media, you know, as opposed to like ham radio or broadcast radio or whatever, you know, some other thing, you know. And how does it represent itself according to the technology?
Well, it depends upon the broadcasters or the producers of the medium. Radio is fine for the spoken word. And back in the good old days before television, probably people didn't think much of the technology of a future television. You know, they figured we got the movie houses, we got the radios, we don't need yet another medium. And yet, when finally televisions were generally released to the public, it was very expensive back in the original days. But people took to it because visual information is important to people who have vision. That's what's driving the consumer market for television sets, the move from 40 lines interspaced to 720 progressive, to 1080 progressive, to 2K, to 4K, to 8K. So obviously images are very important, and people are willing to spend semi-ridiculous amounts of money. It's going down in price, thankfully, but still the upper end, a very large OLED screen, can be a king's ransom still.
Well, hopefully, as the technology gets better and better, also the quality of a content will also get better and better.
You are an optimist, David. I tend to unfortunately think the other way. I think that people who produce great works are scarce. Talent is limited. And so as you increase the supply of creative material, you tend to, in my humble opinion, dilute the talent pool. And I think there's unfortunately good examples where people who aren't particularly good at writing stories are being given money to write stories. So I tend to unfortunately think that eventually when the industry settles out and a lot of the streaming services go away and the amount of material that's produced contracts somewhat, because there's, I think, a limit in the talent pool, the general quality will improve. Now, there are certainly diamonds, both shiny and in the rough out there, and there are great shows. But for every great show, there's probably 20 or 30 modern-day versions of My Mother the Car.
AF2P.
Yes, 2P.
Yeah, Ed is the name here. I want to make sure I got it in because I was getting in because Rick was giving me some trouble. But nostalgia, I used to do the broadcast band DXing, and it was so much fun back then.
What was that? Was that broadcast radio?
Yep, broadcast radio, and, you know, in New York, you try to hear California, you try to hear anything on broadcast band, and you could actually get QSL cards.
It's sort of surprising who and where you could get QSL cards from back in the old days. I seem to remember, I think it was Popular Electronics had some kind of a deal where if you send them in that you heard something from them, I don't know where you would hear them, but I think they were involved in the pseudo QSL cards as well. And yeah, broadcast stations would regularly do that. It was not unusual. It's now, I'm sure, it's very unusual, unfortunately, like most things that the people enjoyed doing back in the good old days.
Yep, I wouldn't know that, but anyway, let you get back to it. I just wanted to get that in there because it was so much fun back then.
Okay, very good, Ed. And again, back then, things were a lot less homogenized. So listening to different areas, you got a really good feel for what was going on there as opposed to here. I think if you had the same thing going on now, you'd find that a lot of these broadcasts are just canned broadcasts that come from the same broadcasting mill, you know, some location where they just crank it out and they ship it out to all parts of the United States, nice and homogenized. Anyway, David, I think we kind of covered the topic for tonight. You got anything to kind of close it off with?
Yes, Roy. I want to say that imagination, there's a potential for it, but imagination is generally free of charge. Promotion costs a lot of money, and that's what television and broadcast radio is all about. Thank you.
Okay, David, I would add probably that in general, the entire industry requires promotion because there are so many options. You can spend your entire life on one of a series of streaming services. You could stick on Netflix for the rest of your life and never repeat yourself. And so advertising and cross-promotion and self-promotion and all manner of promotion is probably what's going to lead to some group of companies making a profit and surviving and others sinking under the economic weight of the money required to maintain a streaming service. So it's interesting times we live in. Again, I wouldn't quite call them golden, but they certainly are interesting. So I hope you avail yourself of all this, and I hope you you accurately calibrate your BS meters, because there's a lot of silly nonsense out there along with the incredibly useful information. So thank you very David. Thank you very much, David, for that topic for discussion. I hope everyone enjoyed that. I'll go next on my list to Jim, KD2VHD. What's your question or topic for tonight, Jim? I'll try again. Maybe Jim didn't hear me. KD2VHD, Jim.